Yes, I'll have a large one. Way, large one, get it? Oh yes, you do, large one. Sounds a bit rude, doesn't it? Sounds a bit rude. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, today I'd like to talk about something quite serious, which is the way in which we're... Oh my God, my ear must have fallen down. It's getting very cold in northern Finland at the moment, and so I've had to avail myself of some new earmuffs, but unfortunately they do keep falling down. Look, anyway, look, let's get to the point. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Today I would like to talk about breasts, about boobies, about revolving wobbly bits, and particularly about the fact that they are getting bigger. And why they are getting bigger. Now, I will put the studies that relate to this underneath the video for those that would like to have a look at them. But there is some fascinating studies that have indicated that this is the case, that have indicated that breasts are getting bigger, and indeed that have indicated that this is probably for genetic, rather than people say it's all to do with all these things are all to do with environment. That it's almost certainly for genetic reasons. Now, there's a very interesting meta-analysis which looked at differences in breast size over a long period of time, and what it has shown is that we do have other analyses that are to do with bra sizes and things like this, and it's certainly the case that bra sizes are getting bigger in Western countries. But the problem with that as a measure is that lots of women don't wear the right bra size. Certainly women, shops are selling bigger and bigger bras, but women don't have the right bra size a lot of the time, so it's not a good measure. A better measure is from you actually to measure the bust, the circumference of the bust. Now, according to this meta-analysis, which looked at data in many, many countries, the circumference of the bust has increased between 1940 and 2002 by 6.3 centimetres. So boobies are getting bigger, and not just in Western countries, but in many other countries as well. Now, why is this the case? Well, the obvious answer is that women are getting fatter, and if women are getting fatter, then obviously they're going to accrue fat on the boobs, and that is going to make the boob size bigger. Now, the problem with this argument is that, yes, that's true if you look at countries such as America or Britain, but this meta-analysis looked at many other countries as well, countries that are less developed and so on, and where the obesity epidemic isn't as substantial or hadn't hit in yet when the analysis was collected. And even in those kinds of countries, breasts are getting bigger as well. So it seems that breasts are getting bigger, and although the issue of fat is contributing to them getting bigger, it is not the only reason. Now, this is interesting in itself because this is happening alongside some other changes that help us to understand what the explanation for this might be. Age at menarche is getting younger. And again, a meta-analysis has found that age at menarche has been getting younger by 3 months per decade since 1977. So, for example, in the 1930s, the average age at menarche was 13.8. And that is, by the way, considerably earlier than it was in the tens or in the 19th century, when it was 15, 16, whatever. In the 1950s, it was 12.8. By 1995, it was 12.1. And by the year 2013, it was 11.9. And it's almost certainly younger now. And what does that say for outliers? My daughter has a friend who started her period at the age of 8. That's the outliers then become very, very extreme. So age at menarche is getting younger and has been getting younger across the 20th century. In addition, there is some evidence, which we'll see in a minute, relates to this, that twinning is getting more common. So in the United States, it seems that across the 20th century, the number of twins, not identical twins, but of non-identical twins, has doubled. So people are more likely to be twins. Now, finally, what's potentially interesting, as we'll see in a minute, is that females appear to be becoming more masculinized, really, in their features. Now, there's a good, I'll put a link below, but there's a very good blog entry about this some years ago by someone called Dianikis, in which he morphed together the faces of the most famous Hollywood film stars, the most prominent Hollywood film stars in 1940. And he then did the same for the faces of the most prominent Hollywood film stars in about 2009 or whenever it was he did his analysis. And what you see very clearly, there's a startling difference between the two. The Hollywood star of 1940 is more feminine, more innocent looking, very much more a wife or a mother. Whereas the Hollywood star of 2009 or whatever is much more a whore. And what makes her a whore are these more masculinized features. So narrower eyes, by the way, is associated with testosterone. A shorter face and a wider face, this is associated with testosterone. She's basically more manly. And what she's screaming at you is one night stand, dangerous, Jezebel, fast and loose. I'll break your heart into a million pieces, but it'll be you won't regret it. It'll be fun along the way. Whereas what the one from 1940 is saying to you is stable, trustworthy, kind, loving, good mother, but boring. Not a lot of fun. And so you have all of these things, and I would suggest that they are interrelated. Any one of those, particularly the issue of menage, people like to put it down to environmental factors, such everything has to be put down to environmental factors by those who think they know best, chemicals or whatever. But that may be the case in isolation. But taken together, what they indicate is that the so-called life history strategy of humanity, which is at least 0.5 heritable, if not more, is changing. Now, I've looked at this a number of times on this channel, of course, but I will, for those who are new to the channel, I will re-summarise it. Life history strategy is that we all sit on a spectrum between a fast and slow life history strategy. A fast life history strategy involves being adapted to an unstable yet relatively easy environment. This militates in favour of living fast and dying young, because it's unstable, so you could be wiped out at any moment. So therefore everything has to happen quickly in a fast life history strategy environment. So you deal with this by being promiscuous, by having a sex with as many fit people as you can, and having as many offspring as you can, and not investing much energy in them, and hoping that some of the offspring survive. You invest therefore most of your energy in copulation. As the environment becomes more stable and more harsh, the carrying capacity for the species is reached. And so we move towards what is known as a slow life history strategy, or a K strategy. In this environment, you have to be, the environment is harsh and competitive, and so you have to be adapted to the environment. If you simply have lots and lots of children, then they're not adapted to the environment in any way. They're not prepared for the environment, and they could all just die. And so, because it's so harsh and competitive and cold. And so the result of that is that it selects in favour of taking energy. We only have a limited amount of bioenergetic resources. And so we take energy away from copulation and we put it into nurture. And we nurture a smaller number of offspring whom we have by a smaller number of females, let's say, in order to ensure that they are optimally able to compete in the environment and that they survive. Now, what this means is that there has to be a period of time in which they can be nurtured, in which they can learn things about the environment and adapt to the environment, i.e. childhood. And therefore, the whole system slows down. Fewer children, a longer childhood, more investment in them. And also the nature of the personnel, the nature of the character changes. So if you have a predictable environment, a stable environment, and there's problems to be solved, and those that are better at solving those problems will be more likely to survive. So this means that you select for intelligence. You have to be able to plan for the future. And make predictions. This selects in favour of the personality trait conscientiousness or impulse control. You are more likely to be good at nurture if you are a nice, kind of person. And so this selects for the personality trait agreeableness or altruism or empathy. You are more likely to survive if you can make bonds with other people and form tightly structured groups where you can work together in order to survive. So this selects in favour of empathy and impulse control. You are more likely to survive if you are mentally stable. And so therefore this selects against mental instability and so on. So you have a different kind of personality, you become more intelligent, and you also alter the way in which you look. So in an unstable ecology, you live fast, die young. So you and people select for, you know, to have a sex with as many people as possible. To the extent that they're selective, they want to have sex with people who indicate, if they're women, indicate youth and beauty. Youth, because people that are young are more likely to be fertile, and beauty, because what beauty is basically saying is that you have good genes. You are high in, you know, estrogen or whatever. You have good genes. You've been able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype in the face of disease, which means that you have good genes, because a person that has bad genes will be using disproportionately more of their bioenergetic resources to fight off the disease, and so they'll end up looking asymmetrical and ugly and whatever. So therefore you advertise as conspicuously as you can your genetic quality. One of the ways you do this is by growing secondary sexual characteristics. These then become an object for sexual selection, because if they are symmetrical and beautiful and pretty, then they, like a peacock's tail, the peacock's tail is telling the female, look, I have all these bioenergetic resources left over to be able to grow this big, beautiful, symmetrical tail. I have such good genes that I can cope and survive with this basically handicap in hunting terms of a massive tail. That's what it's saying. A peacock with bad genetics, with mutant genes, will have a gaudy tail or a small tail or whatever. So you sexually select for the object. Now, this is true with breasts. Women, by having large breasts, are advertising in an environment where they could live fast, die young. So they have to advertise their genetic quality as quickly and conspicuously as possible. And the way they will do that is by growing large breasts and large buttocks. The large breasts are showing, I have the bioenergetic resources left over to be able to grow breasts that are A, large, and B, symmetrical and beautiful. And so men will sexually select for those for that characteristic. And so having large breasts is associated with an R strategy. This has been found at the individual level. So women who are sociosexual are more likely to have large breasts, and men, that is to say sexually promiscuous, are strategists, and men who are sociosexual are more likely to be attracted to large breasts because they are strategists, and what they're interested in is short-term relationships with our strategy sort of people, and they're not particularly interested in investment. By contrast, women that have small breasts, they are more likely to be K-strategists, because in their environment, you don't live fast, die young. You live slow, die old. So it's not necessary to conspicuously advertise your genetic quality in that way. So you move energy away from conspicuously advertising genetic quality and into basically a more complex mind in which you are higher in altruism and higher in impulse control and things like that. And men will be more interested in that kind of mind because they will be investing in the offspring. They'll have to invest in the offspring in order for it to survive. And if they invest in the offspring, they want to be sure that it's their own offspring. And one insurance policy that it's their own offspring will be a female who is high in altruism and high in impulse control. And this means that she will play by the rules. You know, she won't have affairs and things. She'll play by the rules. She'll be loyal and whatever. And she'll be kind, so she won't want to hurt her husband, and so she won't have affairs. And so by sexually selecting for that kind of mind will go with small breasts. And so it makes sense for such a man to be more sexually selective for smaller breasts. And men who are lower in sociosexuality tend to be more attracted to smaller breasts. And women who are lower in sociosexuality tend to have smaller breasts. So you can see how this relates to life history strategy. Now, the second thing we looked at was age of menarche. Well, this is obvious. You live fast, die young in an unstable ecology. So therefore, the more faster strategist you are, the shorter will be your childhood, the younger you will go through puberty, and the younger you will go through menopause. And I looked at this in my book Making Sense of Race. The younger you will do everything, and the younger you will die. Because you just do everything younger, so that would be consistent with us becoming more R strategist. That the age of menarche is getting younger. As for twinning, well, this is again a matter of investment. Do you have one offspring and invest a great deal in it, or do you have multiple offspring, thus inherently investing less in them? The more R strategy the animal is, the larger are its litters. Insects have thousands of children in one go. And it gets smaller and smaller and smaller the more K-selected the animal is, as we get down to humans, where in general it is one child. Now, within humans, people who are more R strategists tend to have more twins, because twins mean you're having more of them and you're investing less in them. It's quantity over quality, whereas K strategy is quality over quantity. So again, the fact that twinning is increasing would be consistent with this. Finally, the fact that the masculinization of females, to the extent that there is evidence of that, is increasing is also consistent with this. Because if you're in an R strategy ecology, then what men will basically do is pump and dump. And so there is a degree to which the women are left on their own and have to fend for themselves and look after the children. And so obviously the women are going to be will be selected to be more, but essentially masculinized, because those traits will allow them to survive in an unstable, dangerous ecology. So they will be basically be doing male roles. There will be less of a division of labor in a highly unstable ecology like that. And so the sexual dimorphism, the difference between the sexes, is smaller in such unstable ecologies. And what you would expect is that women who would be R strategists would look like that, and would look slightly more masculinized on some markers. And men who were attracted to a fast life history strategy woman, who were fast history strategists, would find those markers more attractive. Now, what you get with a slow life history strategy is the man invests in the woman, and therefore you get more of a division of labor. The woman's job is totally to look after the children, so she becomes very, very agreeable. Very high in estrogen, basically more feminine, and therefore the differences between men and women become bigger, because the women become more feminine, which can be seen at its extreme with the East Asian women. And the biggest sexual dimorphism, by the way, is among the Greenlandic. They become more feminine, so you have more sexual dimorphism. So if the difference between men and women is becoming less, if women are becoming masculinized, then this would be consistent with women becoming more R selected, with becoming faster life history strategists to a greater extent. So all of this stuff indicates together, taken, as I said, taken on its own, bigger, earlier menage could be down to chemicals or something in the food or whatever it is that's fashionable to suggest that it is. But taken together, what these indicate is that potentially at the genetic level, we are somehow selecting, at least among women, for R strategists, for people that want to live fast, die young, to be sexually promiscuous, to invest less in their offspring, that sort of thing. That's what we're selecting for. By the way, another thing, of course, sexually promiscuous is that you will get among K strategists, is that you will get monogamy to a greater extent, because you get fewer, and the more extreme it is, then the fewer partners you have, because you're investing more and more in nurture of fewer and fewer, and fewer children, and again, the fewer partners you have. And so the breakdown of society, whereby you get these women on benefits that have multiple children by multiple men, that is, of course, an R strategy thing to do. So we get all this together. So what is going on? Well, what's causing this? Well, it seems to me what's likely to be causing this is that until under harsh Darwinian conditions, we were selected towards K strategy. We were selected, relatively speaking, towards K strategy, because we were living in a very harsh yet relatively predictable environment. Now, this is now completely broken down, and what we are living in is a predict is an environment that is predictable. It's not like it, but it's also very, very easy. And this then means that basically the crucible of selection has moved from things like child mortality or warfare to simply who is able to have children or who wants to have children. Because anybody can have children. There's no child mortality anymore. Child mortality was 50% in 1800. It's 1% today. And so the question becomes not, are you healthy enough to have children? Can you invest in your offspring so that they survive? Whatever. The question simply becomes, who has children? Who is having children in this ecology? And particularly in an ecology where we have reliable contraception. So people that don't want to have children don't have to have children. It's people that are reasonably intelligent and can use contraception will avoid having children. And I've looked in other videos at how this is meaning that we're becoming less intelligent, because people that are more intelligent are better able to use contraception, and so they end up, for various reasons, not having children. But anyway, what are we selecting for? Well, the first thing that we are clearly selecting for, and there's good evidence for this, is the answer is we are selecting for our traits. So the first thing we are selecting for is low conscientiousness. People who have low conscientiousness, low impulse control, tend to have more children. Why is that the case? Because they don't plan for the future. They live for the now. They are too impulsive to use contraception or whatever. And so they end up having more children. The second group of people that have more children is simply people who are selfish. People who just are almost elements of narcissism, but people who are highly selfish people. Now, those people might have more children because if they're on benefits, for example, they get more money if they have more children. They won't use that money to look after their children. Obviously, that's not what they're about. They're not about investing in children. They're about investing in sex. But they get more money, and so therefore there is a strong incentive for them to have more children. A second component to it could be that there is a degree to which people tend to look up to people that have children. It's a sign of your health. It's a sign that you know, as a species, that you're the future of that species or whatever. People do look up to it and congratulate you if you have children, or at least most people do. And so if you're a selfish person, there could be an incentive in that way. It's a way of sort of attaining status or something to have children. So that's the second group of people who have children. The third group of people that have children are people that have low intelligence, because intelligence is associated with being impulsive, it's associated with living for the now, it's associated with not efficiently being able to use contraception. I mean, let's say you're on the pill and you have low intelligence, you don't understand that you have to take the importance of taking the pill at the same time every day, otherwise you might get pregnant. And so you get pregnant by accident. And there is, of course, a -0.2 correlation now between having, in Western countries, between having children and your IQ. Your ability to solve cognitive problems or intelligence. So what this means is that we are, on that level, selecting for R strategy traits. Now, there's also a degree to which we are selecting for K strategy traits. So people who are high in agreeableness seem to have more children. This is presumably because if you're agreeable, you're high in a desire to nurture. That's what agreeableness kind of is. Looking after people and being kind and so on. And so that means that you want to have children, and so you have children. We are selecting for religiousness, because there's a religious desire to have large families as mandated by God or whatever. And we are selecting for elements of K strategy. But it may be that overall, it is our strategy, at least among women, that is winning. That is being selected for to a greater extent. The whole thing is breaking apart anyway, because we are no longer under normal RK selection conditions. And this would mean that it would just break apart. The KR syndrome of traits, that the fast traits and the slow traits would simply break apart into who, in an environment of complete ease that is highly predictable, who desires to and can have children, because there's no selection pressure anymore. So the whole thing would break apart. But it may well be that it is broken apart in the direction, I know I've said the opposite of this on here before, but I'm now realising that that research may have been wrong. The slow and steady wins the race. That it's breaking apart in the direction that we are having, we are pushing things in an R-selected direction, in a direction of live fast, die young at the genetic level. And this would explain parsimoniously why breasts are getting bigger, age at menarche is getting lower, women are seemingly becoming more masculinized, and twinning is getting higher. Taken together, this would imply that we are becoming more, this is within race, by the way, we are becoming more R selected. And so what the future would be, but then of course there's also those that became more K selected. And so those people would be genetically quite different. And what you would expect would be a future where those people would come apart. You would tend to associate with those that are genetically similar to yourself, cooperate with those that are genetically similar to yourself, want to be with those that are genetically similar to yourself. And so those people would come apart. And that's what we may be seeing at the moment, the coming apart of humanity. Well, I hope this has been of interest, and if it has, then please, please, please do subscribe. It really helps if you do that. Remember that and help the channel, which you can do in the ways you see below. I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, and I will see you soon. And goodbye.